The Man in Line, brought to you by netzeromatrix.com, helping Isle of Man companies and citizens to understand net zero targets and a green future.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Man in Line on Manx Radio. Get in touch by calling 66 13 68. You can WhatsApp on 166177, same number for texting, or email the studio at studio@manxradio.com. So how about that £10 million development scheme? Designed to encourage the redevelopment of privately owned brownfield sites. Where do you think that's going to end up? Lots more to talk about today, including I've just had a couple of emails in about people knocking on doors, asking to do work, and that ties in with the warning last week from the OFT about rogue traders. We'll come to that later. David's first on today. Hi, David.
Hi, Randy. Just on that little comment there, that was one of my successes when we brought in cold calling, so I can put that badge in my pocket. But I wanted to talk about the two politicians who actually went to a tribunal because of ageism. And just saying, when my term of office came to an end because you didn't get elected, can I say to you, politicians don't have a contract of employment or terms and conditions. All politicians get when you're elected by the public is that you get a letter from, I think it's the chief secretary at the time it was, to say that you were elected and you had to attend parliament on such and such a date. And all you were told then is you had to make sure you were available for the Keys and Timald. So that's the same thing that happens if you become an MLC as well. So I just wonder where the tribunal came or what that decision came to, because A, they don't have contracts of employment, and they don't have terms and conditions of employment, because if a member gets elected to an area, he can actually just sit in the chamber and actually do nothing. Some would say they're doing it now.
Well, Mr. Boot and Mr. Perkins, obviously, because they stood for election and weren't re-elected, they were eligible. Well, normally, if you were under the age of 60, you'd be eligible for a resettlement payment. Mm. Now, they took it to court and said they'd been discriminated against on the grounds of age, because they're both over 60, and they didn't qualify for the resettlement payment. And obviously, the tribunal found in their favour. They got £34,000 each. So anybody under 60 would have got the payment. They didn't, sued and won.
Yeah. So what does that bring now for the people, the likes of myself, who didn't get in 2016? I was just over 60 as well. I just wonder what it would be.
David, I think that's a precedent. A precedent's been set.
I'll need to. If there's any lawyers out there, I'm in the book. I need a pro. I kind of couldn't afford like maybe these two individuals do. But what can I say to these two individuals? I'm not getting at them totally. But what I'm saying is you entered into something which is a political background. And you knew what you were getting into. And every 5 years you had to get back in by the electric, and it didn't happen. But what could I say to these individuals is, maybe that what they should do is, and I know one of them should do it, definitely the other one should do as well, is donate that money to charity in the Isle of Man. That £34,000, I'll put it out there, that what those people should do, if I did it, if I went back into a retrospective claim and I was awarded it, I'd be definitely putting it into Manx Charities in the Isle of Man.
Well, they both took it to a tribunal, David, because they consulted the Manx Industrial Relations Service, which is absolutely free of charge. You can see them, but that's free to see the industrial relations people.
And I'll be on the phone after you.
Okay, all right. Thanks. Thanks for calling.
Bye.
All right, yes, well, this is two former MHKs who've got £34,000 each because they went to a tribunal and said they've been discriminated against by Treasury because they were over 60. They lost their seats at last year's election, Martin Perkins in Garth and Geoffrey Boot in Peel, and Glenn Faber lost their seats. If they were under 60, they would have been eligible for a resettlement payment They were over 60, didn't get it, consulted the Industrial Relations Service, took it to tribunal, and they both won £34,000. Tynwald has since updated the scheme to remove the age restriction. Julian's on now. Hi, Julian.
Hi, Andy. Interesting news that's been doing the rounds. Easiest way to find it is to do a search for Swedish government scraps Ministry of Environment, which is quite interesting. There's a lot of gnashing of teeth and wringing of hands, of course, with this one. But I would say that probably the reason for it is they're worried for their people. Stockholm's got a population density of about 12,000 per mile, per square mile, which is almost as much as London. Even though it's a small world population for the country, it's quite concentrated in Stockholm with their underground and their, you know, the trams and everything else. And the forecast is coming in at around about a sustained minus 7 degrees Celsius at night and about minus 4. So I think they realise that they've got problems with the wind generation being able to keep up, because, of course, there's been this tilt towards wind generation. And, of course, we had this news recently from, I think, the Telegraph was reporting that low wind speeds were partly responsible for these potential blackouts, where they were going to pay people in the UK to not use electrical items and stuff like that. But what's interesting is right now, I don't know if you can have a quick look, Andy. If you go on windeful.uk, so it's a short ending to the URL, so it's windeful, so winderful.uk, that shows the live generation across all the 12,000 wind turbines that are all off and onshore and offshore around the UK. Now, the graph at the bottom, you'll notice that it's kind of flatlined for the last 24 hours, and it's currently producing somewhere around 2%, and it's the average for the last 24 hours is 1% of just our electrical needs. And that might explain the other news as to why the UK's ordered double its amount of coal this year to keep the lights on, because they're having to ramp up their coal power stations. So it's kind of interesting that the Swedish government has scrapped their Ministry of Environment, because I think because they're a more northern, up in the 60-degree north area and beyond, you know, when you're in Hammerfest in winter in the north of Sweden, it's pretty blooming cold all the time. You still got to heat and power and light everyone up there.
Yeah. Oh, well, I mean, the Swedish government hasn't totally scrapped it. What they've done is folded it into another ministry, haven't they?
Correct. But, of course, there's all the furore that it's not a separate entity that's got quite a lot of influence over their energy policies. And I think they've seen the writing on the wall that, you know, they need an awful lot of, as we know, heat energy to keep them. I mean, minus seven, like continuously. And there is some talk. There's a very cold, anomalous kind of cold over northern Greenland that's moving east. So there is talk that in the next few weeks, there might be an Arctic blast that's going to be coming down over us as well. Yeah. So whether that happens or not, of course, it's a chaotic system and nobody knows, but it's very cold up there.
Yeah. But I mean, the thing with the was particularly the northern Scandinavian countries, I mean, they know full well how to deal with the cold. Many years ago, I lived in Norway and lived in the north, in the Nordkap of Norway. And they simply know how to deal with everything there. They're very pragmatic about what to do, and they prepare. Whereas, of course, as we come closer to the equator, temperate people, we tend to panic when it goes below zero. Whereas in Scandinavia, they do know how to deal with it. So, I mean, you just wonder what. I mean, bearing in mind, they have got a new government in Sweden. They do have a kind of right of centre government, which has scrapped this environment ministry. And of course, everybody's shrieking with fear because of it. But I mean, I don't know whether that's pure politics, whether they're doing that to gain political advantage, and whether or not that Ministry of Environment will function fully perfectly within another department. You never know with politicians, do you? But of course, the Scandinavians, the Swedes, will have to pick up the pieces afterwards.
But, you know, like Occam's razor, it may just be that they're concerned that they don't want their people freezing to death in the winter, because they know very well that they've got to be able to sustain heat energy to keep people alive, because, I mean, it's a lot colder. But, you know, it's not just the Northern Hemisphere. I mean, there's a few interesting. If anyone looks into, say, Australia's had the coldest winter they're coming out of winter now. It's almost into their spring, and yet some of the hiking trails in the mountains are still closed due to snow, which nobody's ever seen before. I think Antarctica has recorded its lowest temperatures since it was discovered. And then you had the news a couple of weekends ago that Buffalo, New York had 80 inches of snow and minus temperatures for days on it, which caused quite a lot of chaos around the place. So there's kind of there's certain news things that aren't getting through to the public consciousness as to why has Australia had its coldest winter in, you know, decades and decades. It is interesting that that's not being reported.
Yeah. I mean, going back to Sweden, of course, I think they're, aren't they opening more nuclear power stations in Sweden, I think?
Well, you know, I think that's necessity more than anything because, you know, obviously the CO2 is being kind of, everyone's being told it's a terrible thing, even though I personally don't agree with that. But that makes me controversial, apparently.
The Chief Minister, by the way, was speaking to your concern this morning in Keys. Did you hear that?
I haven't, actually.
The swimming pool report is out within a month.
Ah, excellent, excellent.
Apparently, the Department of Education, Sport and Culture has the report in its hands, and it will be made public, hopefully fairly shortly, certainly before Christmas.
Let's hope they lash up a load of solar thermal tubes on that lovely long roof that's pointing south-southwest and get some free heat into the pool to make it a bit cheaper to do. By the way, finally, one little other thing. Leibniz, like the chocolates, that you, one of my favourite chocolate biscuit things, Leibniz University in Berlin has just done a review of the 34,000 wind turbines in Germany, and they're very concerned because their average is per turbine at around about the normal site, you know, the big ones that you have on land, 550 bats killed per turbine per year, which translates to the UK's amount at around about 770,000 bat deaths per year across the onshore turbines alone. So that's quite a big story. I would have thought that Manx Bat Society might want to have a little look at that and start, maybe somebody like to talk about that, because if you get any turbines over here, 550 dead bats per turbine is quite worrying.
Okay, all right, thanks, Julian.
Thanks, Andy.
Good to hear from you. Oh, we can't feed birds, says Big John in Laxey, but we can own cats, and cats kill an incredible rate of birds. So all cat owners, this is John's advice, will you please put a bell on your cat and save the wildlife birds that are under extreme threat at the moment from avian flu? There was that report came out from DEFA that said that the only birds that are dying at the moment are wild birds. No kept birds have been under threat, really, at the moment. I got a note in from Morgan. Thank you, Morgan McCready, who drops a note in and says, you may be interested in legislation that's been brought in by the Irish government to control the use of plastic bottles and cans. Ireland was way ahead of the posse in placing a charge on plastic bags. Certainly, do you remember that? That was several years ago that Ireland banned plastic bags, a move that was an immediate success. And they've basically announced the bottle and can deposit scheme in Ireland, something that's been on, I think, in Germany for several years. Under the deposit return scheme to be introduced in February next year in Ireland, if you buy a drink and it's in a plastic bottle or a can container, you will pay a deposit on the plastic bottle or container. Customers then get their money back when they return the container to a retailer or a collection point to be recycled. These machines where you stick it in and get your cash out. The deposit will be 15 cents for a can and bottles of up to half a litre and 25 cents above half a litre. In Ireland, every year, 1.9 billion drinks in bottles and cans are consumed, and they basically said that cans and bottles can be returned to any relevant shop, not just where the drinks were purchased. Options on return machines including choosing to spend the money in the shop, receiving cash, or donating to charity. So Ireland ahead of the game, well, certainly ahead of the game in the Irish Sea, and congratulations to the Irish on that. The technology is there, and obviously single-use plastic is a bad idea, and one of the ways to eliminate that is to charge a deposit and you get your money back. So any thoughts on that? By all means, get in touch. Do you think that's something that we should do on the Isle of Man. It's been mooted before, and still to this day, I'm sorry to keep banging on about this, but I have yet to receive a cogent reply as to where all the money has gone that you and I have been paying for plastic bags for the past couple of years. 25p a bag, 20p a bag. The money must have gone somewhere. If you're involved in a charity and you've had money from this plastic bag fund, then please can you tell me, because nobody, absolutely nobody, has come forward with a spreadsheet, a profit and loss sheet, as to where the money has gone that we've been paying for those plastic bags that we've now got sitting at home in their dozens. Eddie's on Man in Line now. Hi, Eddie.
Hi, Andy. You'll be waiting as long as we had to wait for the report about the swimming pool.
The Chief Minister said it is on its way.
Yeah, but then about your money from the bags.
Yes.
You'll have to wait a long time, I tell you. I wonder, the reason maybe that it's taking so long is she's trying to figure out how to get out of this one. But one of the things I was coming on for was I heard something yesterday, which I thought was, I love really good inventions, and this sounds like one. The rumour is that McDonald's now, as you go in your car, they photograph your registration, and they put it on all your packaging.
Ah, where did you read that? Where did you hear about it?
I didn't read it or anything. I heard about it,
right.
And I thought to myself, yes, absolutely fantastic idea. That way, if somebody finds the litter, just read the registration on it, report it, and they know where it's come from. So, yeah, what a good invention, don't you think?
I think, I mean, that's been mooted before. I think there was something reported, probably last year, maybe before COVID, that they were going to do something about putting a barcode that every time you paid for something, it would take, to transgress GDPR, it would take the details of your card, translate it into a barcode and put that on the box that you took away so that they could identify somebody who was littering. But, Eddie, it just depends on what they do about it. I mean, if they're going to fine somebody £50, then that will stop people. What would we do then if people litter?
Well, I think just I may maybe heard that wrong. I thought he said car, and he may have said card details. So, but just the knowledge that there is a technology out there that you can get done for, I think will be a deterrent enough. You'll never get rid of it all, but that will be a deterrent on its own. Blimey, if I knew. If I threw something out the window, I could get done for this.
Yeah, but Eddie, you're not the sort of person who would throw stuff out the window, are you?
Well, no, but I never would. But, you know, my initial statement was that I think it's a great idea, a great invention. Don't you?
Oh, no, I think I'll put it this way. The trouble is there's always a minority of people. They're the people who empty their ashtrays from their car into the gutter, the people who throw litter out of the... and the people that we know. You walk down any street, look down, and you'll see big black splodges on the pavement where people have spat chewing gum out. Now, how on earth do you...
never get rid of them.
Well, the thing is, in Singapore, you get fined for that. It's simply not allowed.
Well, we have the legislation here, but it's never adhered to, is it? Nobody sort of monitors it or anything or even reports it. It's just, it's one of those things, I think, Andy, you'll always have. You know, we'll never get rid of the idiocy of some people. You know, they just haven't got brains, some people. You know, it's like in the summer when you've got droughts on, the idiots that go out and have a barbecue out in the bloody countryside. Excuse my language, sorry. But you know what I mean. There's always an idiot somewhere. And there'll always be somebody who breaks those common sense rules, if you like.
The ones who set fire to Bradderhead and places like that.
Yeah, it's madness, isn't it? But there'll always be somebody. There'll always be one of them idiots knocking about somewhere. It's just the way of the world, isn't it?
Okay. All right, Eddie. Well, we'll look forward to reading the swimming pool report anyway.
You're dead right. I think it's taken so long because she's trying to get out of a hole. It's taken her this long to think of an excuse.
All right. Thanks for calling, Eddie.
We will see.
All right, 26 minutes past 12. Yes, the swimming pool report, the Chief Minister said this morning, will be with us shortly. I think within 2 weeks, a month or so, and I think the DVD comes out in the new year. The teachers shouldn't get any pay when on strike. We don't get paid, says Des. And Boris said, on the subject of the Southern Pool, hasn't had Thursday early bird swimming for 18 months now. And Jay in Colby says, Andy, regarding Summerland and being a brownfield site, when holidaying in Wales this summer, I was in a car park in Carmarthen. Gentleman approached, seeing the Manx number plate of the vehicle. Transpired he'd worked on the island in the 70s when the awful fire happened at Summerland, and I told him no development on the site. He was stunned, the fact that nothing had been done. I told him how planning had been a real problem, and he said the Manx government is its own worst enemy. I had to agree, says Jay in Colby. More messages in today on Man in Line. Thank you for getting in touch. One said, to be an MHK, you have to live in the constituency in which you are standing. It doesn't apply for commissioners, albeit they have a direct say on local issues, says Nick. Only 2 out of 6 candidates now standing in Port Erin live in the village, which means that we could have commissioners deciding on our lighting, bin collections, provisions of other public facilities, who aren't themselves subject to the effects. More importantly, they'll be making decisions on the rates we pay whilst not themselves having to pay them. I think I'll have to vote for the residents regardless of their manifesto commitments. Surely the rules need changing. There is an election of 2 commissioners in Port Erin on the way, and we'll be reporting on some of the candidates on Man in Line soon. I'm sick, says Big Phil, sick of the amount of builders and commercial vans that are parked in residential neighbourhoods and blight the areas. Surely there needs to be a stringent bylaw enforced against it. Is there a bylaw against, well, it's about the size of the van, isn't it, that can be parked in a residential area. But if you live in an area that has got commercial, big commercial vans and lorries parked around on residential streets, have you said anything about it, and has anything been done? Let's find out which councillors voted for the bins to go fortnightly. And what about the bag drops to houses? Totally the wrong decision, says Tony. Well, this is the story about the now fortnightly bin collection in Douglas, which has been causing all sorts of trouble in Douglas. I wonder whether this has affected you. Now, all sorts of people are getting involved. Distress, upset and anger, 3 of the words used by an MHK to describe Douglas residents' feelings about fortnightly bin collections. Now, in Colby, they'll roll their eyes and say, we've had this for years. But distress, upset and anger. Douglas Council ended its weekly collections in September, and some have been finding the change difficult to manage.
Douglas North MHK David Ashford has shared more than 100 photographs of bins around the island's capital. Some are overflowing, some have bin bags dumped next to them, whilst others have litter spilling out. He's written to the leader of Douglas Council, Claire Wells, describing the recent changes as ill thought out and ill conceived. He told Sean Cowper that for some residents, it's also embarrassing.
For some elderly residents, where the husband and wife may be suffering from medical problems, so they need added bin space because they use products, sanitary products and so on. And what they're being told when they ring up for the council is, oh, you must undertake a waste audit. I mean, how humiliating is that for people at that stage of life to be told that someone's going to come round, inspect all their waste, see what they're doing? They're going to have to explain their medical issues to that person who they don't know. quite rightly, those constituents are saying, well, we'll just struggle on. We're not going to embarrass ourselves like that. And it's really, really distressing for some of them. We also have the issue where there's large families, which again, they're saying, who is the council to be coming in and telling us, like we're children, what we can do? It's all very, very big brother.
And you mentioned as well that there were some photos that you've sent to Councillor Wells that you've posted on Facebook as well that show bins overflowing, bags next to the bins, rubbish spilling out of them. Is there a safety concern around this situation?
Just before we recorded this interview, I spoke to a constituent this morning in Willesden who's now seeing vermin that they've never seen before. And it's not a coincidence that, of course, the collection up there, I think, is this week. So there's bins already being filled up and they're starting to see vermin around the area.
Well, that's David Ashford talking about those the fortnightly bin collection. Now, why are the changes being introduced? Well, the leaflet that came from Douglas Borough Council said environmental, because we're a UNESCO Biosphere Isle of Man partner. Basically, green credentials. Sustainability, everybody says hoorah, but surely they've saved money in doing this, from a weekly to a fortnightly. And if Douglas Borough Council has saved money, perhaps they'd like to tell us how much. Chris is with us now. Hi, Chris.
Good morning, Andy, though I know it's afternoon there. We're a bit behind you here.
Whereabouts are you, Chris?
I'm in Ohio today, heading to other parts of the country within the next few weeks.
Okay, and what can you tell us about litter?
Well, a couple of thoughts. You know, I know Singapore does a fine if you're caught littering. I think the Isle of Man is too wealthy a place for that to make a big impact. I think a better choice would be community service, and community service not served all at one time. Community service where someone had to come out once a week for a month or 2 months and actually maybe go help clean up some of the mess that's happening in Douglas from not picking up the trash every week. But to go out and actually work in the community, that engenders a sense of pride in community. Just paying a fine when you're in an affluent society where there's plenty of money doesn't really have an effect.
Okay, does that happen in the States?
In some places, I know in the rural areas that I have lived in, if you're caught littering, you probably pay a fine, but they also have community service as part of the sentence, because the only way for someone to really take pride in their environment and in their community is to get out and work in it and to see what the litter actually does.
Okay, good point. Thanks for being with us today, Chris. Take care in Ohio.
Thank you, Andy. Bye-bye.
Okay, and Betty's on now. Hi, yes. Betty. You're not in Ohio, are you, Betty?
No, maybe I wish I was. But actually, I'm ringing to support the Douglas residents about the bin thing. Now, I live in Lazare, and we have had bin collections fortnightly for goodness knows how long. But it's an entirely different situation. Most of us have plenty of room because it's more or less in the country, and we can have two or even three bins. But the situation in Douglas where there are many people in flats and with small houses and not the space for extra bins, I think it's a terrible situation and a stupid idea, and they will get more rats and more disease and things like that because people just can't cope with it. So I do support the residents of Douglas.
So you don't think it's a case of, I mean, there are lots of people in apartments and blocks of flats in Douglas, but there are lots of people with huge houses. So I mean, there is a case sometimes where people just have to learn a new way of living, Betty. There are some people with big houses who could full well organise their lives in that way.
Yes, but you do have to think about all those that aren't in big houses.
Okay. All right, Betty, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, and take care.
Okay, we appreciate that. Thank you, Betty. So what do you think about Chris's suggestion then, in that if people litter, Don't find them, give them community service to do. 50 hours of community service, 2 hours a week for 6 months, picking up litter. Do you think that would work?
Concerned, confused or curious about climate change? Want to do your part? Then visit netzeromatrix.com, helping businesses and individuals understand the net zero targets that government has set, how they'll be achieved and what impact it will have upon us. Plus, get practical advice and tips for saving energy, the options available for switching to renewable energy technologies and much more. We all need to do what we can. So visit netzeromatrix.com and join us.
Construction waste today.
Tells recycle for another day.
A builder skip or two.
Tells skips will bring to you.
At Tells Skip Hire and Waste Disposal in Snugborough, you only pay for the waste you bring. For waste disposal and skips, give us a call on 677 137. That's 677 137. Visit Tells today or find Tells Limited on Facebook.
Call Tells Skips today.
677 137.
This is my last will and testament. To my family, I leave years of financial headaches, large legal bills, and the prospect of having to sell our home to pay for it all.
Is that the legacy you choose to leave? Without a proper will and thorough planning, it could happen. Mann Benham Advocates, experiencing wills, probate and estate planning with a friendly service to make sure the future of your loved ones are secure. Don't put it off. Call 639 350 for your free initial consultation with Mann Benham. Here for you.
Come to ShopRite now and enjoy that ready for Christmas feeling, no matter what. Why risk disappointment later? Now's the time to shop our best ever festive food and drink choice, with great offers and big savings across the store. And thanks to our on-island warehousing, we've plenty on the shelves. Get that ready for Christmas feeling. Buy now and be sure you have it at your nearest ShopRite. Proudly locally owned.
The Manx Museum is 100 years old this year, and to mark this momentous occasion, Manx National Heritage have curated a special exhibition and podcast, Museum 100, which will feature a myriad of treasures like this one.
On the 12th of June 1894, whilst digging foundations for a new house in Douglas, the hoard was uncovered. It was described as one of the most dramatic Manx archaeological finds of all time.
The Museum 100 podcast, a century of our national collections highlighting life and culture on the Isle of Man. Download or subscribe now from the Manx Radio website and listen whenever you want. Museum 100 podcast, celebrating a century of curation of our nation.
The Man in Line, brought to you by netzeromatrix.com, the Isle of Man's main net zero progress website.
It's 21 minutes ahead of 1 o'clock, live from Douglas in the Isle of Man. This is Man in Line, and a note in from Douglas, who says, "Wonderful to hear Chris in Ohio. I'd wonder what had happened to him. He's working hard in Ohio. Why are there no Christmas lights on Douglas Promenade?" says Bill. "The prom looks deserted. Only the Claremont Hotel seems to have made an effort. What has the corporation done? No Christmas lights on the prom. All the money spent on the promenade, and then we leave it in darkness. Makes no sense," says Bill. Well, another open invitation if anybody from Douglas Corporation wants to come in and have a chat on Man in Line, by all means do. We did have a long screed from Councillor Wells. Unfortunately, we don't have time to read that out live. But if Douglas Corporation want to pop in, why are there no Christmas lights on Douglas Prom? Living in Paul Rose, motorhomes, caravans, large commercial vehicles, all in my street. I was told by one member of Douglas Corporation during a housing inspection that it's too much hassle and too much money to take people to court. I say it's madness. Well, if there's a rule, surely the corporation would, the council would, take people to court. And if you're not allowed to park a commercial vehicle on a residential estate of a certain size, of course, then surely that's the rule, that's the law. "The council was only collecting the bins once a week at my mother's home in Mexico. Their bins are collected... Oh, sorry. At my mother's home in Mexico, their bins are collected every night." Surely this isn't good enough for a country that brands itself first world. Well, they're doing it to be environmental, to protect the biosphere, so they say. Why have litter and dog waste bins been removed on Governors Hill, says Alan. Alan, I wasn't aware of that. Is that so? Do you live on Governors Hill? Has that happened? Helen said, Andy, on the subject of housing on brownfield sites, will the government determine what type and affordable price will they be built for people to buy, or will the developers build and charge what they want? Also, what's happening at the green site at Braddon? That land on the Drinkwater estate is fit to farm and surely shouldn't be built on. Well, I think the subject is, Helen, that it will all come down to planning this £10 million development scheme. I don't think the developers will be able to put up what they want. There will be planning stipulations as to what can be built. We'll come to that in a moment. I just want to tell you, and the good news for Laxey, jump in the air and click your heels, is that the post office has announced from the new year, Wednesday the 4th of January, the post office in Laxey will be at the Total petrol station, the Ellen Van In Fuel petrol station in New Road in Laxey, which is just a short walk away from the current post office. The initial opening hours of the post office actually longer than currently, 10 till 4 Monday to Friday and 10 till noon on Saturday. And also, I think Ellen Van In Fuel are trialling a parcel collection service until June next year. So the Social Security Department will be writing to all Treasury cash benefit recipients to advise them from the 4th of January. My car payments can be collected from the new post office within the EVF garage in New Road in Laxey. It's a limited term contract to basically to see, you know, if it works, and they'll take it from then. They'll see what happens beyond the 30th of June next year. And by the way, it wasn't just Laxey, it was Kirkmichael as well. Obviously, the Kirkmichael sub post office is disappearing. So in Kirkmichael, I think they got more than one expression of interest in providing the service in the village. So they're moving to the next step in the procurement process, which they will complete by the end of February. To provide convenience to customers, though, in that area, Balaff Post Office will be extending their opening hours during this period. So Balaff opening hours will be Monday to Friday, 9 till noon, 12:30 till 4, and Saturday, 9 till 12. So Laxey goes into the EVF petrol station, and Kirkmichael moves until the 31st of March to Balaff Post Office, Monday to Friday, 9 till noon, and 12:30 until 4, and Saturday, 9 till 12. That's the situation with Kirkmichael and Laxey post offices. So, this £10 million development scheme for brownfield sites. If you have thoughts on it, then by all means, get in touch. John's with us now. Hi, John.
Hi. Douglas Cram Lights.
Yeah.
Apart from the Christmas lights, which is a pretty miserable anyway, but yesterday was the first time I'd actually come the full length of the prom in the dark. Now, I think it's quite dangerous because the lights are all on one side, and when you're driving along towards Derby Castle, on the left, there's sort of pools of darkness, shadows, and it's just not well lit at all.
Well, I'm glad it's not just me that thinks that, because I think, I'll be honest with you, John, I think it looks a bit grim.
It does, actually. It's depressing. Yeah, it is.
Well, yeah. Somebody knew it was going to look like this. Somebody paid a planner, an architect, to put all this together.
Yeah, they're the ones with letters after their name, aren't they?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, that's right. I thought it was really... I mean, okay, it's pretty mean not having the Christmas lights anyway, but, I mean, the Douglas lights in the summer were a feature of Douglas, and now it could be anywhere, couldn't it?
Well, I mean, there are parts where it works. If you go to the Woodburn Road, go to the terrace, that looks nice, but I think that's because a lot of the retail outlets, they do their own thing.
Yes. And some of them make a very good effort, you know. I mean, the old post office in, can't think of the name of the street now, but that looks very effective.
Oh, in Regent Street?
Regent Street, yeah. I mean, that's looked very, very effective. They made a big effort there.
Okay.
But then you walk out onto the prom and there's nothing.
Yeah. I mean, it would be lovely if Douglas Council could just come and tell us what the thinking behind all this is. But what can't speak can't lie. It's dark and there's no getting away from it. Okay, thanks for calling.
Can I just ask a request?
Of course you can.
I'm trying to find, is there anywhere on the island that repairs much-loved old teddy bears?
Okay, so who repairs teddy bears?
Yeah, you know, so they've seen, they're getting on a bit, but this one could just do us some repairs, and I don't know anywhere on the island that does it.
Is it your teddy bear?
Well, it was one of my son's many, many years ago. Oh, okay. I'm going back now to the 1960.
Okay. We appreciate it. Teddy bears are wonderful for sentimental value. So if anybody repairs teddy bears, if you could get in touch with Man in Line and I'll pass your details on to John. Okay.
Okay. Thanks. Now
appreciate that. I've never been asked that before, but really happy if we find somebody who does repair teddy bears, that will be sensational. This £10 million development scheme, designed to encourage the redevelopment of privately owned brownfield sites, says the enterprise minister, is not an excuse to hand over cash to wealthy developers. Laurie Hooper, the enterprise minister, is going to ask Timbal to back plans for an island infrastructure scheme. Now, if approved, developers could get up to 25%, a quarter of their cost paid. Laurie Hooper says it's not a free-for-all.
We're going to open the scheme for applications. There'll be an application period. Then they'll all be assessed against each other as well as against the scheme criteria. So it may very well turn out that at the end of the first round, we don't actually award anything. And the reason for that is we want to make sure we are supporting the right investments in the right place. So there'll be quite a lot of criteria around the social or economic benefit as well as the visual amenity, residential benefits of any particular development. Really the intention is to look at those sites that haven't been developed for a very long time, largely because it's not financially viable to develop them. And another key part of the scheme is that all of these applications will require some kind of assessment of financial viability. So if the scheme is viable without government support, there's no chance of government support being offered. That's the way the scheme is designed to work. So really it's about saying to developers, well, actually, what is stopping you developing a particular site, and is there a way that some government support could help turn that derelict site that's been empty for maybe a decade into something that is much more usable and much more of benefit to the community?
Have developers said, oh, Minister, if only we had another 25% funding from the government, we would definitely proceed and develop these sites?
So there's an element, I think, of that out there where developers are prioritising other sites. That's what it boils down to. So if I own a brownfield site and a greenfield site, the greenfield site will be cheaper to develop, easier to develop, and I'll probably make a greater profit margin. So there's no incentive for me to try and develop that brownfield site. What we're trying to do is this is another one of the pieces of the puzzle towards levelling that playing field, to say, well, actually, maybe develop the brownfield site first, because this is essentially a time limited offer. You know, this is on the table now. It might not be there in 6 months' time. We may not do another round. And so, if you do own these sites, this is almost like us opening the door and saying, if you think you do need some support to help develop these key sites, now is your opportunity.
Well, there he is, Enterprise Minister Laurie Hooper. Do you think it's a good idea to think that this will get those brownfield sites moving? Sue dropped me a note and just said, I agree purely on fairness grounds that Geoffrey Boot and Martin Perkins should have won the tribunal. They were discriminated against on the grounds of age. If everybody else is entitled to that payment, then surely they should be. Age shouldn't count.
Scents of Man create artisan perfumes and botanically based skincare. 15 island-inspired perfumes such as Woody Balur Allure, Wild Flowers in Elfin Glen, Sparkling Fresh Mananan Cologne, all are in our samples box. Quality is our priority, so we were delighted to receive Fragrantica's Best Scented Skincare Award of 2021 for our Rose Absolute Cream. Free postage for local orders until Christmas. Buy online at scentsofman.com.
Red and yellow and pink or blue?
Thinking of a rainbow?
No, choosing colours for our windows and doors at Manx Glass and Glazing.
Oh, who'd have thought we'd have so much choice?
We do at Manx Glass and Glazing. When it comes to windows and doors, they offer a great choice of styles, materials and fabulous contemporary colours.
Improve and brighten up your home. Visit the Manx Glass and Glazing showroom on Snugborough Trading Estate. Or get inspired when you see the range at manxglass.com.
Office World at Spring Valley Industrial Estate is home to the island's largest stockist of both office and home office furniture. With ergonomic sit-stand workstations and posture seating solutions, extensive ranges of both general and home office desking and seating, and a huge range of complimentary desktop accessories. Many popular items held in stock on island for speedy delivery or collection. Office World Spring Valley. Open 9 till 5:30 Monday to Friday.
Office World!
Interested in a degree or postgraduate qualification? University College Isle of Man is holding its higher education open evening on Thursday, 1st December, between 4:30 and 7 p.m. Visit our nonary campus to learn about our range of degrees, degree level courses and postgraduate qualifications. With 87% of students getting a top grade, you'll get a high quality education and excellent support without the costs of an off-island education. Visit ucm.ac.im for more information.
The Man in Line, brought to you by netzeromatrix.com, the world's leading carbon register and validation ecosystem.
Pastor Mike, good afternoon. 8 minutes before one on Man in Line. Does this go to show some people are in politics for profit only, says Des? Well, I don't see how you work that out, Des. The resettlement benefit is available to all MHKs who stand and don't get elected. So if a sitting MHK stands in election and doesn't get in, they get a resettlement grant. Those are the rules, and anybody who goes into politics, into the Keys, knows those are the rules. But these two MHKs were told they didn't get it because they were over 60. They fought the ground, fought their case on grounds of on equality grounds, and they won. So, I mean, people get paid the going rate, surely, to be an MHK. But it's your opinion, Des. I appreciate that. And where are the protesters to stop the volcanoes? Have you seen the world's biggest volcano has erupted? And that caused huge amounts of pollution. But apparently nobody's gluing themselves to a volcano to protest against it. Ah, that's Mother Nature, you see. How was that figure mentioned, measured out? It's 34 grand, says 414. Well, it's the standard figure. It's the standard figure. I think it's 6 months' salary that any MHK who stands in an election, and the ones who stood for election last year who didn't get elected, get a resettlement grant. That's it. So, I mean, that's it. That's just it. There's a kind of no false equivalence. That's the rule. So text 414, if you want to stand for Keys, get elected, and don't get elected at the next election, even if you stand, you would get that money. That's the rules. When a person stands and is elected as a politician, that person is employed for a fixed-term contract, which ends with the dissolution of Timwald. How can anybody expect to get a golden handshake of $34,000 after a period of 4 years? Those that are made redundant in the private sector after 30 years' service don't get anything like that, says 223. That may well be the case, but it isn't the truth. If you are elected into Keys and you stand and you don't get elected again, then you get the resettlement grant. It's the rules. And Paul's with us now. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Andy. Good afternoon. Unfortunately, it isn't the rules. I wasn't re-elected at the general election last year, and I didn't receive as much as one red cent.
Was that because you didn't do a full term?
Well, it was, but even so, I don't think anyone should make a song and dance about it. If you put yourself to the public and the public don't have confidence in you, then you must accept that. And you shouldn't be given any sort of financial recompense as a consequence.
So they'd have to rescind that legislation at the moment from now on?
I would say so, and I would say so, Andy. Yes, I don't agree with it. I don't think it's right that someone who's effectively lost the confidence of the public should then benefit from the taxpayer.
I'm trying to remember when this came in. When did the resettlement grant come in?
I'm not quite sure. I think it may have been during the Brown administration, but you'd have to check that. But nevertheless, I don't feel that, you know, I mean, I Martin Perkins and Jeffrey Boot did plenty of good things whilst they were in there. They also had, you know, issues, you know, with more controversial topics. But nevertheless, when they put themselves to the public, just as I did, unfortunately, the public rejected them, and that's something you have to accept. And I don't think that resettlement grants or resettlement payments should be a part of the terms and conditions. You know,
so you think it would fit with the mood of the times if this resettlement grant were removed from after the next election, say?
I would say so, yes. You know, and if people are just standing on that basis that, well, you know, with their fingers crossed behind the back, well, I hope I don't get in because I'll trouser 35,000, then really speaking, they probably shouldn't be there in the first place.
OK, appreciate that, Paul. Thanks for calling today.
Thanks, Andy.
Well, there are the words of former MHK Paul Quine, who didn't get the grant because he didn't serve a full term in Douglas South. And thanks for the correction, Paul. Appreciate it. If you want to get in touch with Man in Line Out of Hours, email maninline@manxradio.com. The answer phone is always on 682-631. This coming Friday, Daphne Kane, MHK, is live on Man in Line, currently chair of the Climate Change Transformation Board, but lots to talk about as well. So join us for Daphne Kane this Friday and back with an open line tomorrow, thanks to Chris Quirk today. WINT.